this reminders that AKSE, this Alexandra Konsevich Swartz Zabranovsky and the BV formalism, this stuff is really great. So first, what's the main idea of the BV formalism? And I'll explain things very heuristically. Don't worry too much about kind of technical details. It's the following. So consider, well, let's first think of, you know, remember that a supermanifold is something that locally has both odd and even coordinates. So this is something I'm sure people are somewhat familiar with. So if X is a supermanifold, then a differential is a vector field. It's a vector field D on X, where D is odd, and it brackets with itself to zero. So this implies that, for example, functions of X is Z-mod-2 graded Cochin complex. So you can ask, what structure on X makes this into an actual cochain complex? Say a graded manifold, a DG manifold, we ask that X is a supermanifold, then D is a differential, or also called a homological vector field. We also ask that there's a U1 action on X, such that D is of weight 1 under this U1 action. Then you can use this U1 action to decompose the space of functions into eigenspaces. You can use those eigenspaces together with the Z2 grading to introduce a Z grading here, and this will. The U1 action? What's? Probably? Sorry, I didn't. Yeah, but you should double the weight then, right?
No, right, but that's not in principle. In those definitions have required that you want to compare with the integrating kind of reward.
I don't think let's see. Well, then we define Z infinity of X kind of Z graded. And what do I do? I consider the following thing, where T is a parameter, and T is of degree 2, and this resulting thing is Z mod 2 cross Z graded. So minus 2, and then T times D is a differential, and we make T of U1 weight minus 1, I consider this thing, the U1 eigenspaces, the U1 fixed points. That is the effect of shifting the gradings around. And this is now Z mod 2 cross Z graded and has a differential of degree 1,1. And then in good cases, the Z mod 2 grading collapses. Yeah, I'm probably saying it wrong. But in any case, this is the kind of thing you want. I don't want to worry too much about this. Z is Z gradings. So in the BD formalism, so if X is a DG manifold, we can talk about things like Poisson structures. We can ask for a Poisson bracket. Like this. This concept makes sense. And we can ask that this guy is of some degree. Degree? What we're interested in, so we want in the BV formalism, xdg and a Poisson bracket of degree 1. There's a version of the Jacobi identity, and it's a bidifferential operator by derivation. And also, that this guy is non-degenerate. Which means in local coordinates, it's given by some non-degenerate matrix. So such a thing is going to be a shifted symplectic manifold. This is a manifold with a symplectic form of degree minus 1. Degree minus 1 because of the non-degeneracy. And so the BV definition of a field theory is that a classical field theory is a DG manifold with a minus 1 shifted symplectic form. Okay, this seems totally bizarre, unless people haven't seen it before. And if people have seen it before, it's very obvious. So this is great, because now things like your action function and everything are encoded in the geometry. So, sorry if too basic for people who've seen this before. So note that the differential in this case, well, every vector field on a symplectic manifold is Hamiltonian. And this continues to hold in this graded world. So that the differential is going to be bracket with some function s. Since d is of degree 1, and this bracket is of degree 1, it follows that s is of degree 0, and like s is the BV action functional. Differential preserves the Poisson bracket. I want that to be implicit in the statement of a DG manifold with structure Y, is that that structure is preserved by the differential. So yeah, this is the 1990s version of this story, developed by Schwartz, Konsevich, and those guys. In the past couple of years, there's an algebra geometric version has become popular. This work of Toen and Pantev, people like that. That's more technical because it's in derived algebraic geometry instead of this kind of more this world of DG manifolds. But I don't want to go into the more modern version. But Sasha might appreciate it more. I don't know. No. Well, this is great. So the beautiful thing about this is that to write down a field theory, instead of having to write down an action, you do some geometric construction, which produces for you one of these kind of shifted manifolds. shifted symplectic manifolds. And here's this AKAC construction. No, your X is your space of fields. And X might be infinite-dimensional. In practice, might be. And maybe I won't say this too much. Suppose you wanted to write down, say, a free scalar field theory or something very simple in this form. Then X would not just be the original fields that you started with, it would also include some anti-fields. To write it in this form, but that's a very natural thing to do. And if it was a gauge theory, then X would include things like ghosts as well. So the AKAC picture is how to construct these things. Suppose I have M, which is a DG manifold with a volume form of degree k. And if I take N, also a DG manifold, which has a symplectic form, degree L. Well, one nice thing about DG manifolds is that the space, the infinite dimensional manifold of smooth maps, this is just maps which may not preserve the differential. So just a reminder, if we were in the world of co-chain complexes, Homs between two co-chain complexes is again a co-chain complex, but there are maps which do not preserve the differential. This guy is again, this is a DG manifold, where the differential on this mapping space is a sum of the one. By naturality, any vector field here acts in the mapping space, any vector field here acts, we take the sum of them. And the nice thing about this is that, you know, if we take the cohomology of this differential, we're gonna get a good kind of model for the kind of a more classical notion of a map. Well, so the claim is that in this case, C infinity Mn has a symplectic form of degree L minus K. So this is something people are very familiar with in classical situations. I take the loop space of an ordinary symplectic manifold, it's still an ordinary symplectic manifold because I can integrate the symplectic form. But why is this? Well, if I take the tangent space to this mapping space, this is smooth sections on M of the pullback of the tangent model of N. You know, to vary this map, I just need to vary some kind of, for every point in M, I need to have some direction in N. So if I take if I have X and Y are elements here, then I can define a symplectic form. Y is the integral over M against the volume form on M of the symplectic form on N, X, Y. Okay, so I just point-wise on M, I apply the symplectic form on N. The result is a function on this manifold, then I integrate it against the volume form. And it's just completely formal that this is preserved by the differential. This is this beautiful AKAC construction of field theories. So in particular, if L minus K is minus one, we have a field theory. So here's an example. if let me write down some examples of DG manifolds. I realize this talk's probably going to go too slow, but at least for some people. So here's some examples of DG manifolds at which we can apply this construction. So let's just introduce some general notation. So if M is any manifold, we let M deram the DG manifold with these smooth functions are differential forms on M, and where the differential is the deram differential. So in other words, M deram, we need to introduce an odd direction corresponding to the tangent bundles. The tangent direction, so it's just the shifted tangent model of M. Because once I take smooth functions on this, I get an exterior algebra there. That's how I get the Deram complex. So if X is ordinary symplectic, some classical symplectic manifold, then or deram, say S1 deram, has like an integrate. This is a volume form of degree minus 1. This should be a plus. Sorry, that should be a plus. It's a volume form of degree minus 1, so this mapping space, space of maps from S1 deram to X, gives by the AKSE formalism a field theory. This is, of course, quantum mechanics. This is just like free quantum, you know, topological limit of quantum mechanics. Maybe example. Here?
No, just the last line.
Topological? That's an L to indicate the rest of the word topological. Let's give one more example. Again, if X is a complex manifold, we define X d bar to be the DG manifold such that function C infinity of X d bar is a Dalbohm complex of X with this differential in the d bar differential. Now, if X is holomorphic symplectic, if X is holomorphic symplectic, then X d bar has a degree zero symplectic form. So we can consider, of course, holomorphic quantum mechanics. There's holomorphic quantum mechanics, which in this AKSE picture is given by these maps like this. Because this is a volume form of degree minus 1, this is a symplectic form of degree 0, so we can construct this quantum mechanical system. But the next example, I hope, will tell you give you some idea of the utility of this formalism, which is Rosansky-Witten theory. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. So this is a. It's a.
And so far, only doing classical.
Absolutely. Of course, you know. Classical mechanics, yes. I mean, it's useful to think of quantum field theory this way too, of course, because this is this very slick way of writing down the fields. You can try to think about operators and so on. And the real utility of this is, like, if you just write down an action, these gauge symmetry, it might be kind of a mess how to see all the anti-fields and the engulfs and all that crap. But here, it just comes up in this, well, could you turn on the volume, please? Here it comes up in this really slick way, in like some kind of unified way. So you can you just treat everything as one kind of big superfield, and yeah, it's locally well defined up to the addition of a constant. But depending on what you want to do, if you're only considered like the algebra of operators, that does not depend on that constant. If you want to consider the partition function, it does. So many things you might be interested in doing only don't depend on that lift. So this example is horizontally Witten theory. So if n is a 3-manifold, and x is holomorphic symplectic, then we can consider maps. Well, M de Ram has a volume form of degree minus 3, so that we can consider maps from M de Ram to x d bar. This has a symplectic form. Of degree minus 3. Now, we wanted it to be of degree minus 1, but it's of degree minus 3. So what this means, so this defines a Z mod 2 graded theory. However, you can argue that if x has a C star action, which scales a symplectic form like that, then we can lift to a Z graded theory. As a volume form, because I just integrate a form that's an operation of degree minus 3. Okay, so what I thought I'd explain next, if there's any questions, would be, so Davide explained and Tudor talked about this 3D n equals 4 theories, so I'd like to explain what they are in the BV formalism once you twist them. Actually, maybe I'll do one more thing. Which is just briefly discuss the algebra of operators. So, classical operators. No, just classical operators. Of course, we'll want to quantize them. But what's that? They form some kind of Poisson algebra. But what algebra is it? So, again, suppose we're in this. Let's do this example. empty bar, if we take U inside of M Gram, instead of M, since say a ball, then operators, it doesn't have to be a ball, but this is the simplest case for local operators, are the cochain complex which is C infinity, some class of functions. It's called, say, O, to indicate some class of functions for which I won't be too precise, maps are equipped with its natural differential. In this particular case, since U is a ball, you can use the fact that the Naram cohomology of a ball is trivial to show that this is just going to. In this case, yes, but in a more complicated situation where I have some kind of nasty infinite-dimensional space, you might want to. You might worry. I meant some class of functions which I would don't want to be.
Some class of functions.
I don't want to be. Exactly, yes. But let's say infinity is fine. So here, it's just going to be C infinity of x to bar, which is just the double complex of x. So see that the local operators of Wroclawski Witten theory are just the holomorphic functions on this target. This is the classical statement. Classical statement. And then the quantum statement. Is that, well, Wroclawski-Witten theory is a theory one can quantize. The space of local operators is the same. But now it acquires some extra structure. As a structure which topologists call an E3 algebra. Again, what's the E3 algebra? Consider OPEs in three-dimensional spaces. I can take two disks inside a bigger disk, get a kind of a product like that. This product will depend in some locally constant way on the position of this disk. Formalizing that notion leads you to the notion of an E3 algebra. And this is a particular E3 algebra, and it's like non-trivial, the leading order. You can detect the fact that the Poisson structure on X by thinking about what happens when I move one disk around another in a two-sphere. Yes. Yes. Sure. So in general, so it's called P1. It's just the Poisson operat. And then there's some family. The notion that there's some deformation quantization makes sense is that there's a family of operats. You say the operat E1. Associative operat has a filtration is associated graded. So the general situation is Pn Poisson operat, where the Poisson bracket is of degree 1 minus n. It's the dimension of the n-wise one, yes. And then the claim is that there's some filtration on the canonically defined filtration on the EN operat is associated graded as PM, which means. Well, in this case, it's not, it's, people don't normally pay attention to this because when N is at least 2, this filtration splits. Kind of formality in a very non-canonical way. Well, I mean, the canonical thing is like the homology, the easy thing to see is that the homology of EN is equal to PN. Where the Poisson bracket is Poisson bracket of degree 1 minus N. Recall, this homology is about the configuration space of K points in N space. Is from the fundamental class of the n minus 1 sphere in H n minus 1, a configuration space of 2 points in Rn, which is H n minus 1 of En. So I take these guys and move them around. I get a Poisson bracket, and that's the Poisson bracket you see. But the theorem of Tamarkin, which in this case can be applied to produce a quantization without, with like zero work, is that Pn is actually isomorphic to En, but non-canonically. As long as n is at least 2. Yeah, you can. There's like a universal choice you can make once and for all, which quantizes every three-dimensional TFT. Like, if you look at the proofs of this, you can, some of the proofs are in terms of Feynman diagrams and stuff. Really. Okay. So a twist of 3D equals 4. So 3D n equals 4 theory has 8 supercharges. So let's describe them. So SO3C is, of course, the Lie algebra SL2. We let S be the spin representation. We can think of this as the fundamental representation of SL2C. It's two dimensional, of course. And everything will be complex for us because we're in Euclidean signature. And the supercharges out of 3D n equals 4 theory are just S tensor C4. There's 8 of them. Now note that the symmetric square of S, this is a three-dimensional representation of SO3, is equal to the vector representation of SO3. So, for example, then you can define, say, the 3D n equals 1 superalgebra is just the vector representation plus an odd copy of the spin representation, where the bracket of two spinners is just, I just take their product in V, or psi I in S. Make sense? And well, you want to extend this one intensely with some other vector space. For that to make sense, this vector space must have a symmetric pairing. So like if C4 has a symmetric pairing, so we can define a map. There's a map like this. To S tensor S, tensor C4, tensor C4, and this maps to V tensor C, where here I use the fact that V is the symmetric square, and here I use the symmetric pairing on C4. This defines the bracket on the N equals 4 algebra. So algebra is, pardon?
Why can't you take n equal to 1 meter?
I suppose you could. Oh, but in physics. Oh, the reason is that you would find, as an algebra, it makes perfect sense. But if you try to write down a field theory without symmetries, you would find it would have to have like fields of higher and higher and higher spin, including, you know, spin two fields, so there'd be gravity, and then more higher stuff. So it wouldn't really make sense for, as a physical theory. And clearly SO4 acts on this by automorphisms. So first thing I want to do is just describe what happens if I just twist with respect to, well, so twisting. Roughly what happens is I take some supercharge, say Q, in S tensor C4 with Q equals 0. Now, if I have a field theory, some Suzy field theory, well, we were discussing field theories as always having some kind of homological structure, like the space of fields is a DG manifold. Then we add Q to the differential on everything. On everything. And that is, this is how we twist. Okay? Element of, sorry. So notice also that when we do this, then the image of bracketing with Q inside of V, these translations are homotopically trivial. So that means that if this is everything, then the theory is topological because all translation in every direction is trivial. If pardon? Well, this is a subalgebra, and we have this acts on something, and I've the action of this subalgebra is trivialized. There's homotopies trivializing everything in here. The homotopy being, oh, acts homotopy on our field theory. On our field theory. Yes, 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 but it's. Yeah, because we're in on our twisted field theory, sorry. So I have a module, I have a DG module. I add Q to the differential, then everything that's in the image of Q is exact. So if the image is all of V, then the twist is topological. Topological. So let's start by analyzing Q just to be some given spinner where we choose some basis psi 1, psi 2, the basis of S. And well then in that case the image of Q is spanned by it's two-dimensional. Spanned by psi 1, and psi 1, psi 2. And if you think about it, this is the image inside the vector representation. This vector is null. This vector is not null. It's inside the complex about vector representation. So that tells you, well, in one direction it will be topological, and it will also be trivial in some null direction. Well, being trivial in some null direction means it's holomorphic. So this will be, this theory will be topological in one direction and holomorphic in a plane. Because some vector, which we call d by dz bar, is trivial. And this vector is null. Well, suppose you have a field theory, you only study it in flat space. How do you tell it's not topological? Because.
But you're only not only in free manifold. Just bring free manifold. Without choosing the metric, you wrote down. So why isn't that the same as
topological? You mean when I wrote down Rosansky-Witten theory? Is that what you mean? Yeah, well, that is a topological twist. That will be one of the topological twists of 3D Angle's full theory.
Oh, so you think that will be a topological twist of something else?
Yeah, that the physical 3D Angle's full theory has two topological twists. That is one of them. Yeah.
So you haven't described who's the topological
twist? No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't. Okay, so. So what are these twists? So let's first study this one, which is holomorphic. So the general yoga is that given, well, the general yoga of 3D angles four theories is if you give me some group and some hyperkähler representation, I should produce for you a theory. Now, for simplicity, I will assume that we're just given some hyperkähler manifold instead of a group of the hyperkähler representation. Everything I'm going to say will carry through in the more general case, I just have to say the word stack and derived stack now and then. Yeah, that's some derived stack. If you don't know what a derived stack is, you might worry. Yeah, absolutely. You can start with any, I mean, to write down the Rosansky-Witten twist, you can start with any kind of holomorphic symplectic derived stack, which could be a symplectic reduction. So given X hyperkähler, let's choose one complex structure. And then we have like X D bar with a symplectic form. This is holomorphic symplectic. So we have the kind of holomorphic topological twist of the 3D n equals 4 theory. Well, what is it? I consider maps from order cross C1 slash 1 cross C bar cross C0 slash 1 to X. And I claim that this is the kind of thing to which this AKSE story applies. Why? Well, functions on this are the Dalbo complex of OR tensor, and the Dron complex of OR tensor, the Dalbo complex of C, adjoins some odd variable. I can integrate, if I take some alpha in here, then the integral of alpha against dz and d epsilon, that's some odd integration map. It's an odd volume form. Because it, pardon? On this thing. Because it picks out a one form here, a zero one form here on the coefficient of epsilon. So which implies we have some AKSE theory. Again, the claim is that this is the holomorphic twist, holomorphic topological twist. So there's two claims. The first claim is I have the physical theory. I apply this twist, which is kind of close to the physical theory, and then I get this theory, which is not topological. Then I can further twist and get the Rozanski-Witten theory. No, I didn't describe because it's a bit complicated. But this is easy. Well, this, I've added Q to my differential. Now, whenever I do that, there'll be still some symmetry, namely the Q cohomology of whatever symmetry algebra I originally had. So the Q cohomology of the 3D n equals 4 algebra will act on this. Let's think about what that is. So remember, Q was something like psi 1, 0, 0, 0. So the Q closed stuff, those things, they're going to be things like 0, anything, anything, anything. On the other hand, I can, there's rotations by firstly, SO4 will kills everything, kills all the stuff with psi 1. So we're left with three vectors, namely like psi 2 in any of the three positions. So I need to tell you what those guys are. Hey, Peter. I wouldn't worry about coming at this stage, I've heard, like, we're not. I realize there's a hole in my memory, so I can only write down two of them. What's that? No, no, it's important. So two of them are, well, one of the symmetries, there's like d by d epsilon and epsilon d by dz is like act on or cross C1/1. And these are two of the symmetries. Now, note that they commute. Like you see. And if you do the calculation, you will find that the same kind of commutational relations will be satisfied by some linear combination of these two of these guys. So d by dz is the vector we haven't hit with the supercharge we originally chose. Okay. So now we can do our further twists. We see there's two of them. We can use d by d epsilon. Oh, we've already twisted. We passed to something quasi-isomorphic. We start with a physical theory, we add some supercharge to the differential. Maybe lots of stuff becomes comes in some contractible complexes. So we can pass to some quasi-isomorphic subthing, which is this, with this description here. Yeah. To see what we get. I mean, for me, the attractive thing about this is like physical theory is a mess. This is very easy to write down and play with. Exactly, yeah. And we can see from this, I mean, maybe I'll say something about that in a minute. You can see directly from this thing why it's related to things like quantum K-theory. Two twists, I can take d by d epsilon, or two, I can take epsilon d by dz. Now, this is going to be give us Rosansky-Witten theory. This will give us what Davide called twisted Rosansky-Witten theory, and the one that is related to monopole operators. So why does this guy give us Rosansky-Witten theory? Well, if I consider this thing, tensor, the Dalbo complex of C adjoined epsilon with why I take the differential be the Durand differential on R plus the d bar differential plus epsilon d by dz. Well, if we write epsilon equals dz, then this is just the Durand complex of R cross C, which, as we discussed, leads us to Rosansky-Witten theory. Yeah.
But you said that even after the first twist, the theory was really topological.
No, it's a mixture of topological in one line and holomorphic in one plane, in one complex plane.
And this one is genuinely.
This one is genuinely topological because now we've added something on which kills the d by dz, which was the thing we had left. And either one of them is genuinely topological. Maybe there's just a few minutes left. I don't want to take up too much time. So maybe I'd like to say a little bit about two things. Firstly, quantum K-theory and how quantum K-theory is related to this twist. And the second thing is monopole operators and how monopole operators are related to this twist, I think. But the second thing is mainly because monopole operators were not defined in the first lecture, right? And the detail of mathematicians might require. So let's consider the holomorphic slash topological twist on, say, OR cross sigma, where sigma is a Riemann surface. Now, if we look back over here, to define this AKSC picture, I needed a volume form. So I needed to be able to write down dz times d epsilon. That means if I do things on a global surface, there must be some relationship between dz and d epsilon. So epsilon must be a form of some kind. So the thing you need to do we need to consider in order to be able to integrate epsilon must live in the tangent bundle of sigma. And this is an aside, but if you think about, okay, if I make epsilon live in the tangent bundle globally, then this epsilon d by dz thing will be well defined. It will just be the Durham differential. D by d epsilon would not be well defined. So if we try to define this d by d epsilon twist for an arbitrary x, we'll run into problems, an arbitrary sigma. But the solution to that is to take x to have some C star action scaling the symplectic form. And then instead of having a map, we take a section of an associated bundle built from the tangent bundle of sigma. In that case, then we can define this d by d epsilon. Anyway, if we do this, well, in general, I have some theory here, which is topological in this direction. If I consider the equations of motion of this theory, just, you know, without this direction being compact, with this direction just being a topological line, that will be the phase space of this theory. Since we're talking about maps of DG manifolds, like at the level of, you know, cohomology, this doesn't do anything, because any map, anything here is just locally constant. So it's only here is going to be a holomorphic map to X, and this thing will be some other field. So we find, in this case, that the equations of motion, solutions to the equations of motion on OR cross P1 sigma is the set of holomorphic maps holomorphic together with some other field psi should be H1. H1 because of the shift of the canonical bundle of sigma tends to the tangent bundle of X. Since X is symplectic, this might as well be the cotangent bundle of X. So this is the same thing as the cotangent bundle, the space of holomorphic maps from sigma to X. So from this, you figure out that the Hilbert space should be some class of functions here. And with this kind of form, I mean, I have to admit that this argument is incredibly formal because the space is not going to not compact. We can argue that the partition function on like S1 cross sigma is the Euler characteristic of so, which is, in other words, this is going to be related to the quantum K theory of X. Well, I suppose, well, here I computed the Hilbert space. Suppose I wanted to compute the partition function, I would take its dimension. Now, okay, you may ask, this argument is so formal, you may ask, like, what's the point of it? But for me, the point of this is that it allows you to orient math results in the context of the physics literature. Like, Kunkov is doing this work on some vector duality related to quantum K theory, and you can ask, how does that fit in with physics? You say, well, what he's studying is this twist. Okay. So, one final minute, monopole. Let's discuss monopole. So in this case, we'll have to take X to be some kind of fancy quotient, say, of some vector space, some factor reduction by C star. Let's consider the holomorphic topological twist. And if we consider the theory on say, like some kind of cylinder like this, which is a disk cross ore, then we're going to be looking at maps like this symplectic quotient. I'm turning into a physicist. V is just a vector space, a symplectic vector space with a C star action. Sorry. I also blame the fact that there's a lot of grant writing recently and not so much talk preparation. If we consider the theory on this space, well, what are the equations of motion? We're going to have the equations of motion so we want to think of this as a stack so we want to think of a map from here to here as being some C star bundle on this space within a section of the associated V bundle plus a moment map so it's a C star bundle on C0, 1, say P, plus a section of which satisfies a sigma, satisfies the moment map constraint. And we'll mostly ignore the moment map constraint. So what does that mean? Our bundle, because of the nature of this space, tells us that this bundle must be flat here, holomorphic here, and there it just doesn't just anything. And we're mostly going to ignore this part for now. So consider the theory on this cylinder. But now I remove a point from the cylinder. So what are solutions of the equations of motion? In this case, solutions, equations of motion. Well, at the top and the bottom, I'm just going to have the same data. Say P and sigma on my disk. Bottom, say P prime, sigma prime on the disk. That's in this region. It's in this region. And if you think of the overlap, well, this direction is R. This direction is the disk. Right, we always have a flat connection in this direction. So as we move down that way, we're going to have an isomorphism of our bundle away from the origin of the disk. In the middle, it's like an isomorphism from P restricted to the disk minus the origin to P prime restricted to the disk minus the origin, which takes sigma to sigma prime. Okay. Now, if you're an algebraic geometer, you will realize this is a holomorphic version of the Afanasy-Grassmannian modulo G of O, which is nice. What's that? Right. If I asked that P was trivial, it would be the Afanasy-Grassmannian. So what's a monopole operator? A monopole operator is a way of changing our field theory at this point by saying that the trivial monopole operator would be to say, OK, all my fields extend this point smoothly. But a more interesting one would be to say, my fields extend across here in some singular way. Mm-hmm.
At what point did you
allow the singularity? Oh, well, so far I haven't motivated as to why I want to remove a point. Yeah, I mean, if I've just removed this point, I've allowed some arbitrary singularity, so I'll just remove the point, I've done that. But, so what I want to do is change my field theory, change my fields just at this point. So how would I do this? I would study the equations of motion away from this point and think of a way to, different possible ways I can extend it across there. I can think of like some Lagrangian submanifolds or something like that. That could fill in this point. So the monopole operator, how can I fill this in? In the missing point. So, a formal way I would say this is, if you study the space of solutions to the equations of motion, you'll find, because this is effectively a two-sphere, effectively something of codimension one, it's some very large symplectic manifold. And I want to choose a Lagrangian submanifold, which fills it in, replacing the Lagrangian submanifold of where P is just the same as P prime. So, but concretely, the replacements you can write down, if we set P prime equals P tensor O of n, where O of n is the line bundle on D associated to the divisor 0, n times 0. Well, this, of course, satisfies this property. It will be a a Lagrangian in some big space, which is the equations of motion here. But because I haven't told you, I haven't tracked through what this fermionic thing does, this inflected form will be not obvious. But I think, if I remember correctly, it'll be some Lagrangian and some cotangent bundle of the Affine-Riesz-Manion or something like that. We're going to take, it'll be something like this. It'll be just some subvariety of Affine-Riesz-Manion mod G of O when I take its conormal and some shifted cotangent model, kind of thing, if I remember. I don't know why I'm amplifying.
Hey, could you move the microphone away from your throat, please? Awesome, thank you.
Where was I? Okay, so if I do this, this is the monopole operator of charge N. And let's think of what this does to sigma. So what does this do to sigma? It says that sigma prime, so if we assume for simplicity we'll just work in this particular gauge, then we trivialize P, which we can always do, then this field sigma is going to be something like this. It's an element of V, it joins Z. And the moment map, sigma is equal to 0. And then sigma prime is Z to the N times sigma. Well, if N is less than 0, this implies that sigma is in, because sigma prime can't have any poles. If you continue this analysis, I hope people who haven't seen what a monopole operator now have some understanding of what it is. Our line bundle jumps when we cross there, and our field, which is some holomorphic map, jumps in a corresponding way. If you continue this analysis, you would find that this monopole operator gives some kind of correspondence between a space of holomorphic maps here and holomorphic maps here, of the kind studied by Sasha. I would have thought that's the definition of the Coulomb branch. It's the spectrum of the ring of operators. I mean, the classical definition is, I take things built from the gauge field.
What does that have to do with this?
No, I see your point. I don't. Why is a monopole operator related to the more naive operator?
As a mean old thing, I would like to say that the monopole operator is a function, and also I want to argument why all functions are functions.
Okay. I'm with you. I mean, like, it's what you think. So without any supersymmetry, I can define some operators. Okay. They're not supersymmetric for this twist, but for some reason they parameterize the same variety as these monopole operators. It's a kind of. Oh, well, I'm supposed to take the expectation value where my field go to my vacuum at infinity. I mean, I consider a field configuration, I choose a classical vacuum, I consider field configurations where everything goes to that vacuum at infinity. I plug in infinity in R3. And then I plug in some monopole operators, and I do my functional integral in the presence of monopole operators. I get a number. app, well, presumably that number will be zero if like my gauge field is all, yeah, if my gauge field is tended to zero at infinity, but if my matter fields did something interesting at infinity, which entirely broke the symmetry, then there presumably would be no classical configurations. That must be it. Yeah, if I was on the Higgs branch, at a point in the Higgs branch, my gauge symmetry is entirely broken. So if I set my classical field to be at infinity, something with no gauge symmetry, then I can I ask for a classical solution which is a monopole singularity? There are none. So. That's, yeah. So in the case when... Right. Yeah, okay. I mean, I totally see your point. I mean, I wouldn't be able to go through the argument now, but I think in principle you might find something like the following. So I wouldn't be able to go through the whole argument now, but in principle you might expect something like the following. I see some room for that as well. Suppose you wanted to figure out everything you can put there. One way to do that might be to say, okay, this is a two-sphere. I took the equations of motion on that two-sphere, that's some symplectic manifold, and I do some geometric quantization, where I'm careful, I do some kind of semi-infinite geometric quantization, where I'm careful to consider states which are close to the state given by a given extension. So that's my some semi-infinite condition. And of course, the classical version of that is to ask for Lagrangians, which are comparable in size to what I do here. Now, if I take V, which is not a direct sum of a representation and it's dual, then that symplectic manifold might not be a cotangent bundle in any natural way. Or maybe it's not a cotangent bundle in a way preserving the supersymmetry given by d by d epsilon. And then you have to choose, yeah. And that's where you might see some room for, like, maybe it's a twisted cotangent bundle or something, and then something on the base gives you this vanishing cycles. I mean, No, I see your question, and I would like to figure it out, but I can sort of see where something like that might come up. Okay. I think I'll stop there unless there's any better questions. Once you include like the fermion thing, if I put it on a compact three manifold, it will have a minus one symplectic structure. But the symplectic structure shifts in codimension one. Near something codimension one, it will have an ordinary symplectic structure. No, not from the formal disk, because that will be near codimension two. No, right. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's see. Right. I mean, and this is the same kind of thing, because the sheaf of vanishing cycles comes from like the failure of it to be a cotangent bundle. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, no, it... Yeah, I think it does for the following reason. I mean, I can take this guy, T. This is an obvious ordinary symplectic form given by transgressing. This has a non-shifted symplectic form. And then inside of here, I have Lagrangian. It's a Lagrangian submanifold. Now, the intersection of any two Lagrangians in an on-shifted symplectic manifold is a shifted by one symplectic structure. They did the derived intersection. Well, that you, it's true there, right? They've taken the derived intersection. The derived, it's modeled by taking kind of paths from one to another. Yeah, so that must be it then, actually. It's good. Well, of course, it's also infradimensional. It's nasty. Sheaves on this space should have some kind of convolutionaloidal category. There should be an algebra in that. Right, exactly. The sheaf should be compatible with that. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay, that's... the thing we haven't introduced is the fermionic guy. So what you're saying is if I just... With ignoring the fermionic guy, I have some minus one shifted thing. And the fermionic thing has the effect of taking the cotangent bundle of that. Yeah, but I don't see why it should be an algebra structure, but I can totally believe it. I can totally believe why the sheaf of vanishing cycles appears.